And we are live. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I am one of your co-hosts, Blake Ruffino. Alongside me is my counterpart and co-host, Joe DeLeon. Good evening, good sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm doing better than the guy that slammed into the scoreboard at the Virginia Tech spring game.
Oh, okay. I didn't know to bring this up. Okay, hold on. Can we spend at least 5 minutes talking about this? How does that remotely happen? Please.
Obviously, and I brought this up for a reason. Obviously, prayers to that guy and then his recovery. I'm glad that the first update was that he is not like he's in good.
He's not extremely injured, right?
Yeah, there's obviously recovery that comes with it. But I couldn't think of a worse omen for the beginning of your season
or James Franklin's career at Virginia Tech,
right? Then. A guy parachuting onto the field for the spring game, which that's so extra. Why do you have that for the spring game? Slamming into the scoreboard. I feel bad for that guy. I feel bad for Franklin. I don't know how you're supposed to recover from that. I have no idea.
You know what's going to happen, right? If they are not great this year, we're going to go back and see and say, remember, this started during the spring. Now, I did enjoy James Franklin's interview with our good friend Josh Pate. I don't know if you saw that. I thought it was – so, look, when Josh does these series of, just talking to coaches, I thought Mac Brown's was by far the best ever. But James Franklin walking us through – being fired and then getting hired at Virginia Tech has got to be like, I don't know how this isn't like a viral moment, right? Like in reference to him saying how that process, because we all have our, this is what's going on. This is what's happening. And James Franklin's like, bro, I got fired on a Sunday. Monday morning, Virginia Tech's admins are sitting at my dinner table offering me a job. And I'm like, do what? Do what? You know, you get what I'm saying? Like that, to actually like get behind the scenes. And then, the first time the general public gets to see you,
you have to cancel the game. Of the fact that like, oh my God, this is such a tragedy. He hit the, I just don't know how you're supposed to have good energy after watching a guy slam into a scoreboard. I legitimately could not imagine. We both played in spring games, obviously not in stadiums as big as Virginia Tech's. I did play against Virginia Tech in that stadium. But if I looked up and I watched somebody slam into a scoreboard, I would be so distracted the entire rest of the game. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and listen, I did kind of check in on them. They got some athletes now.
Did you know that they have – I'm pulling it up really quickly. So there's this CBS Sports article that was written by Cody Nagel that I always reference for when we do these previews for returning starters. Uh-huh. Did you know that Virginia Tech – this is one of the highest totals. The highest total is USC. Virginia Tech has 14 returning starters from last year.
I saw that.
It's nuts.
In all of that situation, I got to tell you, here's a hot take I've been keeping to myself. We can say things in the offseason, we're not bound by them. Here's a little bit of a hot take. I do think that the ACC is going to be deeper than what they were a season ago. I still think that Miami's up top, and it's not close, because we'll talk about Miami in their spring game. And Darian Mintz, of course, went off, and that's a whole different conversation for a different day, or for today, I guess I should say. But, Joe, I got to be a little real with you. There are some teams in the ACC, like North Carolina. I really think that offensively people, okay, are they going to – can they go into one of these out-of-conference big games and win? No. But are teams going to be able to just walk all over them? Also, no. So I'm really interested to see the ACC's kind of rebuilding now that they got some bigger coaches in there. I mean, look, man, you got Cristobal. You got Rhett Lashley. You have Belichick along with Bobby P. You have James Franklin. I mean, Jabbo. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how they respond here, see how things go. But we're not here to talk about Virginia Tech, and we're not here to talk about their spring game. On the docket today, we'll talk about the Georgia Bulldogs. We had a Joe. They got tight ends at Georgia, brother. This kid Rettle coming out of nowhere. It's the talk of the talk out of everything going on there. They think they might have found the Diet Pepsi version of Brock Bowers. We'll talk about that. Ohio State rainy inner squad. We'll talk about the Buckeyes as well. And we'll talk about Miami. And Joe, is college football going to be starting the week earlier? We'll get into that as well here tonight. But everyone do us a favor. Not anyone, but yeah, anyone really too. Everyone do us a favor by hitting the like and share all those groups. If you're on Facebook, it's all the social media pages. You're watching us, listening to us on YouTube. Like, subscribe, notification bell, wherever you listen to podcasts. Rate, review, and subscribe. Every Ruffino Joe show is brought to you by our good friends over at FanDuel. Download the app, the Sportsbook app today. Use your mobile device in doing so. When you download the app, Joe and I tell you every single night, do us a favor, set your preferences. Go over to FanDuel.com/RG for more details to set those preferences today. All right, Joe, we got a lot that we need to discuss here. Let's start off with the Ohio State Buckeyes. The Ohio State Buckeyes game, a rainy one in the great state of Ohio, but Ohio State did have their spring game. A lot of things that a lot of people were trying to pay attention to. Obviously, you have a new offensive coordinator. You have a quarterback that is returning, but you got a lot of pieces that you need to look out for. In recapping the spring game that was for the Ohio State Buckeyes, I guess, what are some of the biggest takeaways that you have coming out of it, and why is it Julian saying?
Well, I'm not going to. Okay.
Anything that was on Twitter yesterday was about Julian Sane. Let's just be real. So I'm kind of making a joke, but I'm kind of.
Yes. Not. Okay. Well, okay. You brought it up, and I was going to talk more about his backup, Tavian Sinclair, because he stood out to me. But I just want to bring up, it's a spring game. There's no reason to be worried about how he performed, but I did think it was noticeable in a no contact situation for Julian Sane. The one thing that we hyper fixated on last year when they lost and during the offseason when we did their preview and we talked about things that they need to improve upon, the thing that we hyper fixated on was his ability to handle pressure when the pocket is collapsing, his ability to scramble, improvise. I just felt like the pocket collapsed really quickly and he just hung in there for no reason. And there were a couple instances where the tip ball that was picked off by Bo Atkinson. I'm not worried that it's going to be some gigantic issue, but I did notice that it felt like a lot of those same problems that we identified last year were still there. But to this point, Tavian Sinclair, man, is insanely gifted. And I just have to come away watching some of the throws that he made. The ball shoots off of his hand. It's insane that their quarterback room is built the way that it is, where you've got Julian Sam, who's like half his size, and then Sinclair is this gigantic Josh Allen-built player that has this frame. He's insanely, insanely talented. I really wonder what is going to happen after this season. Ohio State needs to do everything possible to keep Tavian Sinclair. The one thing that I was thinking about, you know how everyone always says, Blake, having a spring game is a really bad thing because then teams are going to come along and try and poach your players.
Or have I bet you. Well, you know, right. Lane said that on Thursday or Tuesday, whatever day it was, he goes, thank God there's no second portal window.
So seriously, well, I wonder what the phone calls would have been like if there was that second portal window. Well, but the amount of personnel departments that probably wrote down, keep an eye on this kid. We'll talk to his agent around the time when the portal comes open next winter. That was an unbelievable performance. This kid looks a lot more ready to play than I think everybody was expecting.
Well, no tackles, no starting tackles. There was a lot of pressure given up, so you can't really necessarily get a look. No Bo Jackson, so you don't have your traditional run game. So I don't want to – look, you had the Bo Atkinson sack. You had Kenyatta Jackson having two sacks. You get to a situation, Joe, this is how I do it. So whether it's a scrimmage, which I was at a scrimmage on Saturday, or whether it's a spring game, I look for individuals, meaning I don't look at one-on-ones unless it's a situation of a potential first-round guy versus a first-round guy. Then I'm highly paying attention because I don't really do that until I get into the fall because – there's so many things that are going on. However, You can't talk about the front seven and a concern that we had about Ohio State and say, well, you got pressure. Now, I don't know what that says about the offensive line or run game. The tip pass is what it is. I don't think that for what it's worth and the footage that I saw, I don't think that Julian Sain scored there on the rushing touchdown. I kind of just thought that they were really blah in reference to what they were calling play-wise. He did lead them down. There was a lot of short passes, a lot of intermediate throws. There was nothing necessarily layered. And why would you? If you're Arthur Smith and you're Ohio State, why would you?
Yeah.
And so, and here's another thing. I don't necessarily sometimes look at quarterbacks and say, why aren't they leaving the pocket? Now, if it's a problem, that, like for someone like Garrett Nussmeier or Julian Sain or somebody like that, then I start having some issues. But I don't mind a quarterback in spring knowing he's not going to get hit. Just stay in that pocket and try to fire one to get the rep and to get the timing. But it did just feel, you know, that it took him a little bit. Now, Sinclair, to your point, I thought looked fine. I did think that there were some inaccuracies there. Look, he went 9 of 20, but the big playmaking ability with him and Chris Henry are there. They certainly are on the same page. A lot of big plays by Chris Henry. And look, the real question is how quickly can this wide receiver core, can Chris Henry be a guy? Can Kyle Parker be a guy? You know you have Jeremiah Smith. Have you replenished in that front seven, even though you had an Atkinson sack, you had a two Jackson sacks? So I thought it was an all-in-all good day. They just didn't do anything and a lot of them didn't. I thought Georgia kind of did, and we'll talk about Georgia. I think Miami did a little bit more than what Ohio State did. I thought Ohio State was like, look, we're going to run some base stuff. We're going to get in here. We're going to get out of here, and we're done. But I do think Jackson showed a lot. I do think this young wide receiver core like Chris Henry showed a lot. And I think that, well, you just got to continue to progress with Julian Sain. I thought Sinclair showed a lot too.
Yeah, there were a lot of guys, you mentioned this, that didn't even participate in this game because of surgeries. The recap articles that I was reading before I went back and watched, it was just this player's out, this player's out, this player had surgery, this player had surgery, this player had surgery. Nothing like serious. A lot of times guys will have repairs for little things that might have happened.
Earl Little was out, right? Like Earl Little Jr. was out. So there's so many guys that were out there.
We were deprived of getting to see a lot of players. That's why I wouldn't truly hold a lot against Julian Sain. It was just noticeable that the one thing that we had talked about kind of kept coming back up. Outside of Tavian Sinclair looking unbelievable, Chris Henry Jr.
and having dog.
Yeah, having those conversations about him maybe being a little slow to get going, already having some of the younger guys around him start to shine at practices and him till the very end finally losing his black stripe, him going 4 for 96, I think goes to show what a player like he is. And it's a lot of times when you hear stuff coming out of practices, you do have to take it with a grain of salt when it's negative, especially because some of these dudes are just gamers. Some of these guys, they'll go out and practice. They might get in their head. They might try to go through the motions of trying to learn how to do new things, whatever it might be. Guys just approach practice differently than games. And when guys lock the hell in, they lock the hell in and they go 4 for 96. I think it goes to show that him against backup level guys, he is going to completely dominate and he's going to make a ton of really big plays. I'd really like to see if he can continue to emerge and capitalize on this momentum as one of the top receivers this year, because they're going to need someone like him of his physical profile to get onto the field, to carve out a role. We've said it multiple times over. Chris Henry Jr. has the opportunity to be a catalyst for their offense, taking a huge leap forward. And then you mentioned, understandably, going up against some backup offensive linemen, Bo Atkinson and Kenyatta Jackson, I think started to paint this picture of them being a really scary duo next to one another. Bo Atkinson came in from North Carolina and was a little bit more rotational behind Caden Curry. So we didn't get to really see what he was going to be last year, but now he's getting his chance to play. And I think that there's this clear vision for what the defense can become with those two guys, despite losing a lot of depth in the interior. You're losing multiple starting linebackers. You're losing Caleb Downs. You're losing Davis and Igbinosin. There shouldn't be much of a drop-off. And I think the two leaders that we'll be talking about a lot are Bo Atkinson and Kenyatta Jackson.
Yeah, and I think that when you talk about our biggest, it wasn't even a concern. our biggest question mark was what would they do in replenishing that front seven? Well, you don't really know because you didn't have two starting. So here's another thing just to point that out and why we can't really get a look at them either. Two starting tackles not there. Bo Jackson's not there. What does that run game look like? What happens through a four-quarter slugfest, right? Like, I mean, and so you take spring games and practices as what they are, spring games and practices. But look, you can't also disparage Jackson having the two sacks. You can't disparage the pick. You can't disparage them getting their hands up in that pick going to Atkinson. That part you can't do. I'm really intrigued to see how they continue to build there and continue to stack days. You know, we get into the fall here, Joe, and they keep saying, well, Jackson keeps going off and Atkinson looks really good. Then you start having those conversations. I just think that they didn't show anything offensively, and then you got St. Clair in there, and then the truth of the matter was is you let him let it rip. I mean, Joe, he threw 20 passes. I mean, yeah. He was below 50%. He's got to be – Joe, the truth is when you got big-arm quarterbacks like that, they got to be – you know, you got to dial in some accuracy. But when timing was on to Chris Henry, timing was on. And I do think that as the season goes on, Chris Henry will get more looks. Boyd will get more looks. Some of these freshman receivers will get more looks. You know how I feel about Cortez Haighton in that rotation. It might take him too many weeks. I mean, he did that at LSU with Malik Nabers for crying out loud. So we will see as that continues to go on. And, well, I thought it was all in all good day. And, look, you don't take anything away from a rainy spring game either. What are you going to do?
Yeah, well, so that's why what I'm bringing up here with Julian Sand has nothing to do with – I mean, I thought his ball placement was pretty good. We already know that he's pretty accurate. I didn't mention anything there with that. And also, I think that goes to show with St. Clair, with some of his ball placement on some of those deep balls that he threw, he had zip on his ball regardless. He is just going to find a way to get that ball to fly off of his hand. I'm enamored. I'm a total idiot, man. I get bought in when I watch these big athletic guys.
Well, I'll bring something in. If you're not going to run man and teams start running zone on him and he's late in some of those throws that he made yesterday, they're going to get picked. They're going to get picked. Mm-hmm. So that's the part, Joe, where we look at, okay, Joe, they're in man in quarters.
Right.
Typical spring game. So you start going to cover two, cover three, you start going cover six. You're late with some of those passes again. It's going to get intercepted. But all in all, what we're talking about here is, look, just a physical overall standpoint of what we saw from them. I mean, Ohio State is a place that reloads. They don't rebuild. And so that's what we saw. I think the last thing for me, I thought some of the Rossall, I think a lot of people are really high on him, and it's going to be intriguing. Here's how I feel. Other than, like, we'll talk about Miami, we'll talk about Georgia. Ohio State was a team for me in these three breakdowns. I walk away and saying, okay. You know, like a glorified practice to some extent. That's what spring games are. Like, yeah. I thought Miami, just being blunt, I thought Darian Mintz came in there. I was like, good Lord.
Well, do you want to talk about Miami? Because I think there's more to take away from this.
Well, we can, but I'm just saying, I mean, if anybody takes too much from the spring game or too little from the spring game for Ohio State, I just don't think that you can do it. But all in all, really good day. And you got to see a lot of young players that eventually will be able to play for you at a high level.
Right. Naturally, again, that's like the big thing here with Ohio State for me is that we're not really learning very much about any of the starters. We barely even talked about any of the starters. Sane was the only one that was really out there.
Right. I mean, right. We talked about Sane. And I'll say it. I know we talked about this in pre-show. I'll say it. I still don't know what I – like, what did you work on? Because I still thought in some of the stuff when you should have pushed up in the pocket, you didn't. I mean, Joe, to your early point.
That was literally what I said to you when we walked in here. Right. You don't need to fall in the story with that take. That was my take.
I completely agree with you. I mean – I don't mind him to what you were saying earlier. I don't mind him instead of running, trying to stay in the pocket to throw the ball down the field so everybody gets a look because you never know what starting tackles, what that ultimately is going to be. At the same time to what you're saying, you had a problem last year with pushing up in the pocket and taking the hit and just throwing the ball down the field. And I'm just like, you know, I thought he'd be a little bit more crisp, to be honest with you. I don't think there's a negative reason to panic.
There's no reason to panic. And it's not necessarily a negative thing. But the biggest exciting part was that there were a lot of young guys that got to play compared to these other spring games. And the young guys that played were incredibly, incredibly exciting.
Yeah, to your point, I thought of all of the freshmen that we'll talk about today, they had the most that stood out to me.
Yeah.
Georgia had some dudes, but still. All right, let's move on to Miami here. This is why you go and spend $8 million on a quarterback. I mean, if you want me to start off Miami's spring game, this is why you pay out Duke, and this is why you pay a kid $4 million to come here. Joe, I anticipate people, when we talk about this Miami spring game, to come in here on Monday. I'm sure there'll be articles. I'm sure people will be talking about Darian Mensah. He should be front page headline news about what's coming out of Saturday, because if there's anything coming out of Miami in this spring game, and as we recap it here, my God, he's been there 7 weeks. He's been there 7 weeks, and he walked off in Miami in Coral Gables and absolutely abused the secondary. Joe, what is your recap of this Miami spring game? I'm sorry. This is insane. And by the way, he didn't have Malachi Toney. He didn't have Mark Fletcher. And he absolutely abused this Miami secondary.
And the secondary is good, and they're bringing back, and I believe.
Are they?
I believe most of the starters.
Are they? Because Darian Mensah walked off in there and had 3 touchdowns and was sitting on the sidelines giggling.
Compared to Ohio State and Georgia, this one was a lot harder to watch. A lot of the stuff that I found was kind of handmade amateur footage, unless somebody had a broadcast copy. I didn't see a broadcast copy, but it was interesting because the beginning of this, he was a little slow to get going. The timing was off. It was nothing where you'd see throws as bad as the Byron Brown interception that we saw in the Auburn spring game. That's a whole separate conversation. But you saw the timing a little bit off. Like, his guys were just maybe a little bit behind or a little bit ahead on where he was when he was trying to get the ball out. But he got into a rhythm, and it was like, holy shit. Some of these balls that he was dumping right in the bucket, it was just right in their hands, right where it needed to be. This is a guy that we've talked about 100 times over as a pure natural passer. And all that means is once you start to get your feel for things and you're totally just in your rhythm and you're flowing, you're going to be able to hit any throw. Natural athlete that's got some really, really good touch. And that's exactly what we saw. There was a quote from, I had a couple of quotes from Mario Cristobal that I thought were very insightful. Mm-hmm. I'll save the other one for later. This one quote caught my attention right when I started doing some digging into people's thoughts on this spring game performance. He said, to have your quarterback take all of your spring practice and be here for, to have your quarterback take all of spring practice and be here for winter workouts is a tremendous advantage. I think it showed up today. So last year, Carson Beck, recovering from the elbow, huge disadvantage. They still played the season. They started the season pretty well. They were able to do what they did against Notre Dame. Carson Beck looked really good in that first game. Blake, I'm really wondering what this Miami offense is going to be able to do, because I think that Mario Cristobal makes a really good point. When you have a guy that is more physically gifted than Carson Beck, that is more equipped to run Shannon Dawson's offense, what is it going to look like this year? What is that first month going to be like at Miami? How is he going to be able to perform once he catches steam and this Miami offense is hitting at that top gear? I think that this was a very early, just small glimpse of what is to come. This was very, very exciting and promising.
I understand the narrative is going to come out that they didn't have some DBs that were playing, some starters from Miami that wasn't playing. Guess what's got 2 thumbs and doesn't give a shit? This guy. Joe, he hits Barkaden on a 30-yard touchdown. He then hits Upshaw on a 33-yard touchdown. Then he's got a 5-yard score. So people will be like, well, they had some DBs out. That's fair. He's been there 7 weeks. Do you understand on running a new system – and being as high-flying as they were, how difficult that is? but he's had practice at this. This is his third offense in 3 years. This is his third team in 3 years. And if anybody has the experience to walk off in somewhere, take a starting job and run with it, it is him. We have talked about this ad nauseum. It's not about the corners being out. It's not about it being a spring game. Take all of that and flush it down the damn commode. I think that he is the best pure passer in college football. I don't want to hear about the prospect of him. I don't want to hear about the draft with him. That part with me, I could care less. He just continues to go to places over and over and over again, literally three straight times, and all he does is study the playbook, know where he needs to go with the football, makes elite throws, and they score. Hello, welcome to Darian Mensah. I thought some of the things that I read was about the offensive line and protection being good. Now, Damian Wilson wasn't there. You know, they had some defensive pieces out, and I understand that. But you also didn't have Mark Fletcher and Malachi Toney. So what's your excuse now? Arguably one of, if not the best receiver in the country, not named Jeremiah Smith, also didn't play. The most physical running back in college football, and Mark Fletcher didn't play. So if you want to talk about some DBs being out, okay, well, Upshaw was one of the ones who had a big catch, and Barkate hasn't been there. He was on another team just like Mensah was. So what's your excuse now? So what happens when Malachi Toney gets in there? Here's the biggest takeaway from me. Malachi Toney wasn't there, and Mensah still went off. So now what? So then you had Jordan Lyle at the running back position with Fletcher not being there going off. You had Mallory, the true freshman, who everybody's talking about now coming out of spring game, how physical he is and how explosive he is at the run game. You have some people talking about the offensive line. Okay, well, you didn't go up against your best unit, but Mensah was able to perform. You have a situation. You said it best about a month ago when we talked about Miami. You said, Blake, the one thing you got to give Cristobal is that he understands his team and how to play to the strengths of his team. Like last year, they played to the strength of the defense and they ran the football. They leaned on that big time offensive line. Well, Joe, now you have a situation where you got the receiving core and you got some explosive running backs. They're throwing them the ball out of the backfield. You're hitting Barkate. You got more depth at the wide receiver position with explosiveness. Your best guy didn't play. And now you're going back to 2 years ago and some things that you did with Cam Ward. Joe, this team is the most talented team in the ACC, and you got your appetizer. You know, when you go to a five-star restaurant and they bring out that appetizer, that's just what you got. So you can call this a spring game. You can call it whatever you want to call it. You can call it a glorified scrimmage. You can talk about corners being out. You can talk about all of these things. Darian Mensah is a problem. And everybody, not only in the ACC, but the country now needs to understand he's not at Tulane anymore, Joe. He's not at Duke anymore. He's at Miami. And he's got dudes around him. And then he goes in there and shows off. I expect nothing less from Darian Mensah. He absolutely performed.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately the biggest...
Hold on, Tana. Everything we just said about Julian saying is exactly what people should have expected to some extent when a guy who walked in 7 weeks ago to a team where he didn't know the system, he didn't know the players, and he knew nobody. So you talk about, Julian Sain. So here's the narrative coming out of yesterday from a national perspective. Oh, Julian Sain will be fine. And then you look at Darian Mensah and say, oh, well, we don't want to overreact. Well, pick a damn lane.
Right. And this isn't like the, I don't know if anyone remembers the, I think it was Charlie Baker who came in at Utah and he had like a perfect spring game where he didn't have a single incompletion. And it was a really good example to pull from for people to be like, this is why you don't overreact spring games. But we're not sitting here talking about the stats. When we talk about these things, very rarely do we bring up the numbers of what guys did, unless we're bringing up in the context of like if somebody had a couple of really big receptions, couple of really big runs to paint the picture of how many yards they put up. We didn't talk about it with Sain, and we didn't talk about it with Darian Mensah. I don't even know if anyone really kept stats for what Darian Mensah did. It's a reaction to the types of throws that he can make. Mm-hmm. Carson Beck had physical limitations because of his elbow recovery. And it was something that we discussed after the loss in the national championship. It was so visible with the throw that got picked off on that drive that they needed in order to win the game. The ball fluttered. And because he was trying to drive the ball into a tight window, if he had the arm strength, he would have cut it through that window and it would have been caught. Darian Mensa has the arm strength to rip it through that window. Carson Beck sadly didn't. No knock on Carson Beck. He did great things for the University of Miami. No disrespect to the young man. The bit here with Darian Mensa is that you are able to enter and hit a level that is hard to accomplish and upgrade after a year where you had a really good offensive season. Mensa is incredibly gifted. And a lot of times, Blake, I feel like we come on here pre-show and we talk about new said transfer portal quarterback is in this new system. And you and I will kind of joke about, we won't say it on the show sometimes because like we don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but sometimes we joke about such and such player might not have looked really good. The chemistry was off. There's none of that shit with Darian Mensa. It's an aberration to be this prepared and to play at this high of a level, as you mentioned, just 7 weeks or however long it's been, having been a part of the program. The rest of the team looked pretty solid, and Mario Cristobal kind of talked about that, how the other quote that I really liked from him that he had was really funny. It was very Mario Cristobal-esque. He said, "These guys have no right to hear praise right now. They have done nothing, absolutely nothing. And we're going to have
a long way to go." Yeah. Right.
But it was a lot more aggressive than you typically get with Coach B. He said, "Absolutely nothing. We are going to have the most challenging, productive offseason during my time here at the University of Miami." I think that with the rest of the group playing solidly and Mensa shining in those moments paints the picture of like what he can bring to the table.
Mm-hmm. Well, to go on the flip side of that, I think, so here's where I'm at with Miami. I walk out there validated about what we thought that they would be, because you come out of a situation where Jarquez Carter, who's a transfer that comes in, Justin Scott, the big nose tackle, goes off. Joe, I still think that I walk out of there with the two biggest things with Miami that I thought would be the biggest strengths that were. You know, you talk about Lightfoot, you talk about Wilson. Wilson didn't go, but you bring in a defensive tackle from the portal and you still have Moten that's there. So the two big narrative pieces that everybody had been talking about, well, they hit. It's like walking up to a slot machine and saying, "I'm going to roll all sevens here," and then it actually happening. And so I think coming out of Miami, and I understand, you know, what Cristobal's saying, look, everybody's got a long way to go. You know, but you didn't have a situation where you had your two best offensive players on the field with Mensa, and then you went and you evaluated a guy out of the portal, okay, at the defensive line position, and Scott goes off. Carter goes off, and you start getting validated about what their biggest strengths can be. Upshaw has a touchdown. Joe, he's a redshirted freshman. So again, when you're talking about the evaluation pieces, so let me tell you how I look at this. The way that I look at it is, okay, so you mean to tell me that I got a lot of guys from within that are developing. You just went to a national title game. So it tells me a couple things. Number one, you're recruiting at an elite level and you're developing at an elite level. So when you have redshirted freshmen and true sophomores, okay, well, our spring game is full of sophomores and redshirted freshmen going off. Well, it better be. And then it was. So I think the three biggest pieces that you walk into an offseason are now going into a season with Miami, and the three pieces being Darian Minson going off, check. All right, well, we think our defensive line could be really good. We had some pieces out defensively. Well, they go off. Okay, check. You have a really productive run game. You had some really good explosive runs from your running backs. Check. You have true sophomores and redshirted freshmen going off. Check. I mean, so the narrative going in with them were those things. And they checked all of those boxes. And it's what you want to see from a team. It's like your perception of a team. And they live to that perception. I know that's a horrible way of kind of putting it. Oh, Blake, they did everything you said that they would do. So, of course, you think they are. No, it's what everybody thinks that they would have been and what they have done. And they will continue to do it. And it's just a really good way to start off going into the summer months and getting prepared for the season.
And a final thought here. Again, there's not really a ton of broadcast. There's not a lot of footage to go off of here. This was a note that I grabbed from Miami's 247 page when I was reading one of the recaps. They brought up how Cantwell's performance out of all the practices he had where he was showing signs of dominance through those practices, he capped off the spring with his best performance yet. I think that having a constantly every single time reading about him, and then now we're getting to the last practice to the spring game, and it's like, how did he end up having his best one after all these weeks of hearing how great he was doing and seeing videos of him in one-on-ones and in team drills of him looking the part? Like, I really think there's a couple of freshmen that I believe across the country. We already talked about Savion Hyder. I think that he's going to be a superstar. Campbell will be a little bit harder for – it's pronounced Hyder.
Hitter.
Okay. Cantwell, it's a little bit harder to contextualize when an offensive lineman is playing well, but I have a feeling by like the 10th game, once everybody's privy to the way that he's performing, we'll be talking about him at a ridiculously high level for him just being a mauling consistent presence, which is insane to say for a true freshman.
Lastly, and I'll just bring this up there. They got this kid. Okay. Well, I'm going to leave it alone.
No, what?
Cristobal was asked about some of these young freshmen and sophomores that are kind of coming out of nowhere. I don't want to overreact, okay, to some of these situations, but there's another true sophomore, Josh Moore, you know, at that wide receiver position that they've been talking about. So please don't let me down, Miami. You got me in a spot where you kind of had me with the Cam Ward situation, and defensively you pissed down your leg. So don't do this to me again. Don't get my hopes up and let me down again. I think they're really, I think they're really special. They have the ability to be. All right, let's move over here. Joe, the last spring game that we would talk about is the Georgia Bulldogs. And I would be remiss not to talk about the social media buzz that's going on with the Georgia. Oh my God, Joe, they threw a screen pass. They were in midseason form from their fan base because they threw a couple of screen passes. Well, I'm glad that you didn't run some boot naked waggles to the outside on double moves with wide receivers and throwing the ball down the field. With that part being said, because Georgia will be Georgia, run game, tight ends really showing out yesterday with a lot of big defensive pieces. What are your thoughts in the recap of the Georgia Bulldogs?
Yeah, and credit to Brooks Austin who pointed out that those were complaining about the screens. He made a very good point. If my coordinator is going out there running anything that hasn't been in the offense before, like, you should be running last year's playbook. You should be running a lot of things that you did during the season last year that were staples in the spring game. You're not going to show anything new. You show something new in the spring game, that's a fireable offense. Bobo is not that stupid. Although Bobo has frustrated us, he's not that dumb. Georgia, very similar to Ohio State, was without a lot of players. A lot of guys that I was hoping to see, like Sakovi White-Helton, I wanted to see how he was going to maybe step up, and Raylan Wilson, but we were deprived of that because of guys being held out of this performance.
But, yeah, I have a list of their guys out. So Bryce Kuhn, who is really good friends of the program, now works for Georgia. Drew Bobo, Ellis Robinson, Amarius Williams, Gabe Harris. Yep. All out in the spring game to give you a top-end list of guys that were out. Williams, the ACL, that's a problem. But Drew Bobo, from what I understand, held out with precaution.
The big thing for me with an opportunity for some of these young guys or the backup skill position players to have all of these big plays come from the tight end position and the running back position, that is where I think Georgia fans should be excited. There's still a lot to learn and for us to figure out about wide receiver, which we talked about in the preview that we did where we said, hey, who is going to step up? Who's going to be the premier wide receiver? I feel like there's a lot of evidence to believe that they're going to be able to continue to really rely on the run game. And I think that they're going to be more dangerous at tight end. Jaden Riddell, you mentioned, do you understand, by the way, so for anyone who hasn't seen it, he got a jet sweep. I know you understand this, but fans of the program need to understand this.
Brock Bauer special, baby.
To break this down, to be handed a jet sweep, to get a jet sweep, for that to be a part of what is in your arsenal as a tight end,
Do you understand how athletic you have to be? Do you understand how athletic you have to be to entrust it and then also to break away from everybody on a jet sweep? The kid's a really good athlete. I think he's going to fill in for Oscar Delp, and we're going to see him and Lawson Lucky be really productive. But Caden Prothrow made some nice plays as well.
Right. The fade catch in the end zone is ridiculous. And Joe, I don't know if you don't move him into some receiver situations with as fast as he is.
Yeah.
They got some problems at tight end. Joe, they got four SEC tight ends that can play today.
They've got like five kids that can contribute in this tight end room, and they continue to establish themselves as the tight end U of the SEC. There is some legit talent. And even if they're maybe not as explosive at receiver like we hope that they can be, it seems like they can make up with that with some pretty unique athletes at tight end. But I want to add in here before I throw back to you, running back was also a pleasant surprise. Even without Nate Frazier, Dante Dowdell showed that he's going to take over that power back role in the running back rotation. But guy that I wrote down that I kept seeing big plays from is their scat back, 185-pound kid, Dwight Phillips. I don't know a whole lot about this kid. And I kept seeing him catch passes and get the ball in space and make people miss. He's got a nice second gear on the lighter side. But I like that maybe he's the Cash Jones replacement here in this upcoming season.
Thank God.
There's just a lot to turn to, Blake. I want to learn about receiver, but running back is clearly deep and tight end is clearly deep, which is a very positive sign for 2026.
Well, to your point, I mean, the first thing that came out of Kirby's mouth was calling out this young wide receiver core. You know, no Landon Humphrey. I mean, I get it, but passes were missed by Ryan Puglisi, who I thought, just being completely blunt, I thought Ryan Puglisi had a
defense had his ass in a blender.
They had him in a blender.
Starting defense.
I mean, he didn't have a good day at all. But, I mean, I think Canyon will be good. But you miss a couple of wide open passes to C.J. Wiley. I mean, he called out his wide receiver room. And I got to – look, I'm not trying to disagree with Kirby. Get him the ball. I mean, throw it in their area code. I mean, for the love of God, I mean – throw it to the 678 for crying out loud. That's their area code. Throw it in the same place. He's calling out the one young wide receiver room, but when you got Puglisi who can't get it there, Ryan Montgomery can't get it there. It just comes to a point where I don't think outside of Gunnar Stockton, God bless it, knock on wood that he goes down, George is in real trouble. Like, I think they're in real trouble if he goes down. But I did like what I saw from the tight end room. Reddle had the jet sweep was ridiculous. I thought that Prothrow, and then you have Williams, Ellis Williams, or Elias Williams, who is still there. You still got Lawson Lucky. I thought they did a lot of really good things in the run game. You talked about Dodal. Chauncey Bowens had a nice day. Look, they're Georgia. Now, what I would say that I thought was a little bit interesting was to your point last year, want to see a little bit more pass rush. Williams is out in that jack position, but it is a spring game. It is a spring game. But I got to say this too. I have no idea how Tyreek Green is going to be left off the field, the freshman. I have no clue. And so when he's all over the place the way that he was, and he is the you know, everybody's talking about winners and losers. Well, he is the big winner. And so they have a lot of big freshmen that came in here, Caden Harris as well. It's going to be interesting to see defensively how they move forward. You know, Ellis Robinson wasn't there at corner. So it's going to be interesting. Zion Branch is looking not to give up a safety position. So I think that they showed a lot. They kind of reminded me a little bit, just to be blunt with you, more of what they look like 3 years ago than what they've looked like the last two seasons. Really physical up front on both lines of scrimmage, really athletic at tight end, four potentially true backs that can do all different versatile things. Nate Frazier's got to find a way to stay healthy, and so does Gunnar Stockton. But, man, they're so loaded. They're so deep. They got a lot of big-time players. It's going to be interesting to see how they do, but I was really surprised. I shouldn't even have been surprised. They just have so much talent and so much depth. I finally feel like in watching them that they've kind of started to get back a little bit to the depth that maybe we expected Florida to be at.
I think that you mean Georgia, right? You said
Florida. I mean, did I say Florida, Georgia? Oh, yeah. God, that's the worst team to say. Well, I mean, like Isaiah Gibson, Seymour. I mean, Joe, you're talking about, again, we keep talking about depth and depth problems at Georgia, okay? Well, Joe, I'm going to the second and third team, and I got a five-star there. Just being completely blunt, I'm like, ho. Now, last year we go in that situation, and we're like, all right, it is what it is. But now I got on the second and third team just five-star dudes, and I'm like, oh, Jesus Christ.
Well, I think that one thing that hasn't been talked about yet that in the sport in general that we're going to start to talk about over the next couple of years, and I want to start this conversation as I think enough people that look at the broad range of the sport like to – maybe
teams are philosophical.
I think that the removal of the spring portal, I think a lot of things are happening here. The removal of the spring portal, the revenue sharing contracts that lock guys in for multiple years. And also, I think that there's more understanding and more of a realization that constantly hopping in the portal is not good for a player's future, that they're better off sticking around for at least a couple of years. With the sport kind of reverting back to the mean, it does feel like we're seeing there's a lot of player movement, but for the most part, a lot of the top recruited guys seem like they're sticking at most of the places that they're at. A lot of the good teams that we talk about, a lot of times we're talking about players that have been around for a couple of years that are now starting to step up. Riddell is a really good example of that, just as a very simple statement there. Georgia is the one team that stands to benefit from that the most because that was how they created their dominant force teams. They're never going to get back to that 2022 stretch of Georgia play where they had those insane rosters that had
you say that
five stars all the way deep. But I think that we're starting to see, though, that they're returning to depth, and that's the biggest bit with
right. Why
Georgia is now dangerous. You bring up the best point here about Georgia is that I felt like last year coming into the season, as bullish as we were for them to win the SEC again, we still had some pause because we didn't know what to expect from Gunnar Stockton. We didn't know what to expect from turnover on defense and all of these things. I didn't have that same sense watching the spring game this year. I felt like I kind of got what I was expecting.
Exactly. Well, again, you say they can't get back, and then Joe, they're too deep. is five top 50 players? Yeah,
but they're not gonna have that true craziness.
Well,
in the past.
I don't think you're wrong there, but it's just so wild to see Georgia continue to do that. They have a problem. I, before I get out of here, they have a problem at quarterback.
They don't have any quarterback depth. Ball that I saw somebody talking about for the quarterback position, I was like, who the hell is that? I was reading the Dogs 247 page. They mentioned, I think it was Buddha Melander. Mm-hmm. I think Buddha was his nickname or Bubba was his nickname, but Melander, number 19.
And he went 8 of 19. He was below 40%.
And I got to be honest.
19.
Hold on.
He went 8 for 19, and he got a game ball.
Yeah, he was the only quarterback that they brought up. He was the 48th ranked prospect in his year. He's a redshirt freshman. No disrespect to this young man. I have never heard of him. He was the 759th ranked prospect nationally, 94th ranked prospect in the state of Georgia. We had high expectations for Montgomery or Puglisi. Here's what I will say, Blake, before we move on here. As much as we can be negative about the depth at quarterback, we have to acknowledge that those guys were going up against the first team defense. And I think that defense is not effing around.
No, but I don't care. It was time for Ryan Puglisi to take a stand and make a move, and he didn't do it. He didn't do it. He lost. Yeah. And Kirby goes out there and he starts talking about the receivers. And look, I'm not trying to come down on Kirby. You got to throw it in their general area. I mean, he had a good fade route throw that was on the money, but it's a better route being run. So I'm not, knock on wood, you need Gunnar Stockton to stay there. And look, Joe, there's nothing impressive about an in route. Like that, there's nothing impressive about it. So why are you missing it? Why are you there for 3 years and you're still missing inside throws that are 8, 9, 10 yard throws? I mean, he is trying to, in my opinion, he's trying to use all arm, take something off of it and get it to him.
Right. When you heard glimpses of him being like really natural and shining early on, it does feel as though Puglisi has stagnated. Hence why I think that Georgia was probably, they were trying to really win that Jared Curtis battle and to keep him, and losing him, I think, is really,
he would have beaten Puglisi.
I wonder what they're going to do at quarterback in the future recruiting wise. Cause it's
good. They got to go in the portal. Yeah, it's Sinclair, all man.
The portal. Make it's all the portal. Go get Damien Sinclair.
You ain't ever lying. You ain't ever lying there. All right, before we get out of here, Joe, there was an NCAA committee proposal about the calendar. Oh, sweet Jesus. Apparently, the NCAA committee proposal was that they want to move up college football a week earlier. So to week one will be where normally week zero is. Week zero will go a week before that. I don't really mind that. But that proposal is on the table. This proposal from the NCAA comes after you had multiple ADs. Was it the Alabama AD? I think we talked about this last week, saying that SEC championship game is...
Greg Byrne and Del Conte, the Texas AD, said something.
And the Texas AD were like, hey, championship games are done. Well, after that comes out, now you have a proposal by the NCAA to move the season up a week. But then it wouldn't really change anything because in a 14-game sample size week in college football, two byes would be associated in that. So you'd still have the same dates, just throwing that out there. So I don't know what the NCAA is talking about in reference to conference championship games. If you're still wanting to implement the second bye in that, do you see what I'm saying? So like if you want two bye games, the calendar is still the same. The last weekend of the season is Thanksgiving week.
Yeah.
Huh?
That was what I was a little confused by because the premise was really intriguing. And then I was reading the CBS Sports article that I sent to you.
Yeah. Brandon Marcello, I think, wrote it.
He did. And this was what was written in there was that week zero would start at the end of August. Week one would be when week zero is, and it would start at the very end of August, second to last week or the last week of August usually, but it would still end the Saturday after Thanksgiving. And I'm like, I reread that five times.
I did too.
When I did a video on this, I'm like, is that not what's happening right now? Am I on drugs? Like, did I get hit in the head? Like, am I misreading this? Well, what am I not understanding?
There's only one bye game this season. So there's only one. But
didn't we have two byes last year? That's why I'm like really confused by all this.
Last year we did have two byes. You also were in, it was 2 years ago in 2024, but you had a leap year. So for whatever reason, and the way that it threw off the calendar. But to the point,
yes,
the proposal came out and stated that we want to help out championship games, but then you didn't change the calendar.
Right. I think that the benefit from this that was talked about is that it would emphasize player safety and you would have a larger amount of time to play the games in the entire season. It was talked about in the article, but based on this circumstance, it possibly moving up the college football playoff. The way that I read into that, because it wouldn't affect the timeline of things, the way that I read into that was if they're willing to adjust the overall schedule, maybe the next step would be bringing up adjusting the college football playoff schedule.
Bingo.
And it would be all a part of the whole convo. But like, here's my biggest takeaway before I let you jump in on that regard. Like, I think that with college football at the end of the season, with the head-to-head clash with the NFL for primetime games and when they're played for the college football playoff and the NFL playoffs in the last weeks of the season and how frustrating that is and how these broadcast networks want to extract more out of viewership. And just overall, as a college football fan, I want more people to be exposed to college football. Mm-hmm. People are the most excited at the beginning of the season. Most people that aren't huge college sports fans that are just clamoring for football and to get to watch football love week one because it's the only thing that's on and the NFL is off. Like, I think that the opportunity to have 2 weeks, at the end of August, when it's the only thing that's on TV, and we're not starting too early, but those last 2 weeks of August are all people are talking about, is college football is something that I want for the growth of the sport. Selfishly, I want more people to talk about college football, because more people talking about college football means more people watch our show, and I get to have more people that I get to enjoy the sport with. I think in general it would be great for college football.
No, I fully agree. I fully agree with you there. And normally what happens, obviously our viewership tells us, the beginning of the season and the playoffs are the two biggest things that happen, right?
Yeah.
And so, because what happens is there are weeks that you have like a horrible slate of games. I say a horrible slate of games, but not a long stack of games.
Like we had some bad slates of games.
We'll have some bad slates of games. And so I don't disagree with you there. I just, can you come up with a better premise? So I agree with everything you just said. I do think it gives 2 weeks of really primetime action when nothing but really and truthfully MLB baseball is going on, right? And 9 times out of 10 in August, they're going to try to play the games either midday or they're going to try to play the games at night and try to miss that 12-3 window of it being completely scorching hot outside. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you there. I completely agree. So I just didn't understand. Can you start giving better reasonings? Like if the NCAA came out and said, hey, we think that this is a good thing to do to help the playoffs and to help TV, and it helps exposure for our sport. You ever see Roger Goodell saying that we're going to apologize for more exposure? He never apologizes. You know why you have more overseas games? It's called exposure. But they never apologize for the exposure of it. But there is something I want added into this. I want teams to be able to have weeks in July where they can start getting on the field. I want mini camps and OTAs. So if you're going to move the week up, either you got to allow them to move spring into May and let May happen and give them June and then start camps in July, mid-July or post July 4th. I do think that that might be coming. I do think that there's a situation that there's the ability to give them mini camps and OTAs in the month of July. If you're going to move it up, well, Joe, you'll have to. You're gonna have to. You don't have a choice. If you're going to move games until the week of August the 20th, well, Joe, if you're going to give them the 6 weeks newsflash on July the 15th, shout out Rufino's birthday here, but on July the 15th, camp starts. Camp's got to start if you're going to give them the 6 weeks. So I don't necessarily mind that, but can you start giving them some OTAs and mini camps and let them start developing more so that we do this? I like the proposal. I just wish that you would start saying the right things of why you're trying to do this so that everybody starts getting on board. If you came out and gave Joe, name somebody that would have, if the NCAA would have came out and just said what you said, we want more exposure. Do you think any college football fan in America would hate it?
No.
Do you think that coaches would hate 2 bye weeks in the middle of the season? Hell no. And then when you have all of these power conferences going to 9 conference games, they would want to do that. So I like the proposal. I think it's a good step forward. I would just add that amendment in there in reference to you being able to do OTAs and mini camps.
Yeah. I see this as a catalyst for opening discussions for rounding out and adjusting other things. So you start this conversation. This is a good starting point because it allows for you. All right, we're going to move forward with this, but what else can we change? And to what you brought up, there's been a lot of people that have talked about, how can we make spring ball better? Can we make it the month of April for everybody the same exact time frame is a mini camp, and maybe there's a rookie mini camp that happens, and then there are OTAs, and then the preseason starts, and you kind of sparse it out and you break it up. Guys are taking classes at specific times in the summer in order to get ahead like they already do, all those things. I think that if there's just a more centralized timeline, that is how we start to get in a better focus and more alignment across the board. The thing that hurts college football is that there is constant calamity and imbalances and nobody's on the same freaking page. This could be a really positive thing if they handle it properly, but we'll have to hold our breath like we usually do, because every time we think something good's going to happen, it somehow ends up being way worse. And it somehow ends up becoming a gigantic headache and a gigantic problem. But I'm holding out hope for once. I'm holding out hope.
We'll see. All right, a couple of super chats here. Elks with a $5 super chat says, Cam Newton still sucks. Can't hit the broadside of a barn. Throwing into triple coverage. Footwork sucks. Processing sucks. Carr looked far better.
Why did you call him Cam Newton? Why was that? Oh, was that a Freudian slip? I hate you. But I didn't. I admittedly, because we were talking about these three games.
For everybody on audio.
Yeah, we didn't get to the Michigan game, so I saw clips. I didn't do as much digging.
God, he looked bad.
But Blake, didn't we do this last year? Didn't we sit here and say this? Like, I bet I could go find an episode where Elk sent us a super chat and said Bryce Young Underwood. Sorry, not Young Underwood looked like shit. We did this last year. Like, he's in a new system. I'm not overreacting. I'm not going to do it. But yeah, he looked rough. I'm not going to say that he's completely
difficult out. It's difficult for me. Let me tell you why it's difficult for me, because I just saw Hassan Longstreet go for over 300 yards and three touchdowns on Saturday. That's why it's difficult for me. And I'm like, all right.
I'm going to continue to defend Bryce Underwood.
I think you need to start being a little bit more realistic, because he has not changed. All right, here's the thing I agree with him, the Elks, the most. The footwork has not changed. Yeah. It has not changed.
Yeah.
And so, Joe, what has he been working on? Because, look, I've lived in a house with a man who has gone to like throwing clinics, has trained guys who are in Major League Baseball and have been in Major League Baseball for a long time in simple, like natural throwing motions. He is literally, he has his front hip wide open instead of staying closed and going to his target. It is the same problem that he had a year ago. He also has a hitch where he drops back, he brings his right foot back before he throws. And you're seeing DBs break on it when he's doing a double hitch. I just think that he's got a lot of work in processing that he's got to go through here.
I get it. I'm not going to disregard it. I understand it's not defendable, and I completely get all those things that his footwork needs to improve. I'm just holding out hope that he is going to figure it out.
Cam Newton, baby. Cam Newton went off. All right. Elk says, Tavian is better than Underwood, and TSC is Ohio kid not leaving.
All right. So the last statement is what I'm going to respond to. Elks, here's what we didn't talk about. I don't think that Julian Sain declares for the upcoming NFL draft. But to be very, very clear, I don't think that Julian Sain will be a first-round pick. I think that there are a lot of quarterbacks that are much more toolsy than Julian Sain that are going to get a lot more love and recognition. I've already talked to people in the media, in NFL circles, that agree with the sentiment that he is not a first-round caliber quarterback. He played really well last year. He was a Heisman finalist. He's really accurate. He's a really good decision maker. Does not have the tools of a first-round quarterback. He's not going to declare. So if he comes back for his last season of college football, what the hell is Tavian Sinclair going to do? You tell me that kid's going
to
stick?
Go to Michigan because Underwood's going D2.
I'm telling you right now, the Georgia Bulldogs having Tavian Sinclair suit up is going to hit like crack. I'm just going to say that right now. And when it comes to fruition, I don't want anyone to get mad at me.
He's got, next thing you know, Bryce Underwood's going to be the headline for WrestleMania 43.
What are you doing, man?
What are you doing?
I did see the comments of Bryce Underwood saying that he was never leaving home. Well, then someone better ask his dad why he was begging Brian Kelly for an extra $750,000 to go to LSU and not go to Michigan.
I have no context on that.
Oh, I have all the context.
I trust you. I trust you.
Oh, well, you don't have to trust me. You know what? There's tweets out there of me saying this going down before he flipped. I literally did an emoji that said it. The emojis were a bull, a shit emoji, a walking emoji, a money emoji, and a talks emoji. Money talks and bullshit walks. So don't be throwing shade when 2 weeks before you flipped, I got that on Twitter saying, all right, it's over.
I got you.
All right.
I got you. I trust you.
Ohio State's going 6-6. Let's rage bait else. We'll see. They're not going 6-6. We'll see y'all soon. Peace.
Are you ready, kids? The SpongeBob SquarePants merchandise is here. And we're talking officially licensed, as seen on apparel and products at the official Paramount shop. Featuring inclusive sizing and gear for fans of all ages. From premium apparel to must-have accessories, head to ParamountShop.com/SpongeBob and use code PODCAST20 to get 20% off. That's PODCAST20 at ParamountShop.com/SpongeBob. Don't be a Squidward. Grab your gear today.